Müller Türk tribi.
Hi, good morning and welcome to everybody. And it's 100 days, exactly 100 days have elapsed since the completion of the acquisition of SDA Packaging. And what a time. It's been very busy, but I have to say it's been thoroughly enjoyable. We've learnt a lot. As a company, we've really come together. And there's no doubt that we're pleased with progress. But it really is just the end of the beginning. Now the real work starts with the integration. But we're pleased with the progress to date. So thank you all for coming. And I'm joined with some colleagues at the front here. I'll introduce shortly. But also in the audience, there'll be many people from DS Smith. Some from the old DS Smith. But many from the former SDA Packaging colleagues who've been with us for 100 days and have been instrumental to getting us to where we are today. And as always, Gareth Davis, our chairman, is joining us as well. So the key themes. I'll be running through a brief introduction to the presentation, really explaining the work that we've been conducting and the broad numbers and how things are looking. I'll then ask Gary Saunders. Many of you have met Gary before. He's an old colleague of mine. He used to run the UK business for us. He then set up all the integration teams. And when the acquisition went live, he took up the role of the head of packaging, the largest division we have, and it's sort of been a fundamental role to date. And Gary will introduce two new colleagues of ours. Both have joined us from SDA. They have both been promoted up on the first day of acquisition to their new roles. And they'll be talking to you about how they've seen the customer reaction and their first thoughts about the acquisition and working in the large company. And then Steve Dryden, our finance director, will take you through the numbers and the integration to date. And then I'll conclude, and we've got plenty of time for questions from the audience, but we're also joined by many people listening externally, and there'll be time for questions from the external listeners as well. So firstly, the key themes. Let's just quickly remind ourselves, back in 2010, DS Smith was primarily a UK business, heavily dependent or focused on paper, a long paper position, and some other businesses such as spices and office products. But since then, we've been reshaping the business towards the core packaging part, improving the business mix, fundamentally changing us to be focused on our end customer and how do we get it right with our customer. Because we believe that focus will provide the best return for our shareholders. And we define those returns as our primary measure on return on capital, supported by a strong return on sales, growth above GDP, and a balance sheet with a debt below 2x EBITDA. That's what we defined, and the SDA packaging is part of that journey that we're on. And if we remind ourselves, what was the reason for the SDA packaging acquisition? Why do we want to do it? Because it's not just about being bigger, you've got to be better. And what it gave us is this pan-European footprint to really start to serve the customer groups that we felt underrepresented, the large, growing, pan-European customers, a position of supply that nobody else could offer, and to start to give leadership particularly in innovation, where the market's being so fragmented. and for shareholders, realize significant cost, working capital and capex savings, such in the first full year of ownership, we'll deliver above our cost of capital together with substantial earnings accretion. That's what we said at the time of the acquisition, and as we've seen, we're well on track with that. So how do we look now? This gives a map of our packaging positions across Europe. And what it's really showing is how we've moved from this very strong position in the UK to really having a pan-European presence. We extend to all the major markets in Europe, so we can now reach everywhere, particularly in that central European region, northern European region, around Germany, the largest market in Europe, where many of our big customers have substantial operations and we just couldn't reach previously. So it's given us that, but as well it's given us the scale where we can invest heavily in innovation to support the new region, but also that growing Eastern European business. We now have a significant position in Poland, in Czech, in Slovakia, together with our joint venture in Ukraine. So what's our structure like? If we're so focused on the customer, how are we aligning ourselves internally to meet the needs to deliver the opportunity that we believe is there? Well, on day one, the first day of acquisition, we put in a completely new management structure. As you can see, it's centred on packaging. We've aligned the group to our final customers. Most of our customers are regional, so the packaging divisions on a regional basis, supported by a packaging head office, and then the paper and recycling support the packaging division. So it's customer focused, it puts accountability at the coalface. So our regional managers, they're the ones driving the group, they're facing the customer, they have the responsibility, the accountability and the tools to deliver the successful business. And this structure is well known. We tested it, we planned for it, we put the procedures and processes around it, tried and trusted, so that the risk during integration was significantly reduced. And it was all supported by our group functions, as we know that it's been strengthening over the last 2 years. Group functions in finance, in M&A, in legal, in procurement, and the pan-European customer management. So the structure went in on day one. But how do we populate the structure? And again, this is the beauty of having 6 months, nearly 6 months from when we announced the acquisition, having good access to the business so we could plan throughout that period. That's on day one we'd interview and profile the Copenhagen managers. We've done cultural assessments of the SDA business and ourselves to see where those cultural differences were going to appear, so we could deal with it, so we could communicate. So on day one, we put in the right management structure and we populated it with the right people, the right technical skills, the right behaviours, with the right accountability. That's given clarity, it's given ownership, therefore you get the synergy plans being delivered from the ground up, and that again starts to reduce that integration risk. And what is a reverse takeover? So that's our management structure and the team. We're pleased with that. But what about our customers? How do they react when they see their supply base consolidating? Do they get worried and think they're trying to corner them? Or do they welcome you? Well, we did a lot of work with our customers. We knew how they felt about the highly fragmented based within packages, about the lack of pan-European supply. So they told us they wanted it, and now the owner did, and that's exactly how they responded. It's early days, they want us to show leadership, they know what we're capable of, but they've been very supportive. Very supportive indeed, and we'll hear more of that later from Per and Carolyn, as they talk about some specific examples and how we're starting to get it right with the customer. What about the employees, all 22,000 people, spread across Europe? If you've got the right structure, we've got the right management team, we've got the customer support, what about everybody in the company? How do you engage these people? When you're doubling the size of the group, you simply have to engage people in what you want to do, particularly when the accountability is at the coalface. So it's fundamental to us to get that right. It also gives us speed. So we spent a lot of time on the culture assessment, and from that we built the communication program. So on day one, the communication to every employee. On day three, the top 250 managers together, just along the motorway at Heathrow, in the Sofitel there, for 2 days, where we really able to get people together to tell them in our words what we're trying to achieve about a stronger business, of supporting our customers, a growing business. This is why we've done it. And you start to capture people's enthusiasm. You start to get their understanding, and with that, they want to own it. They want to be part of it. So they take the class and they develop them in their way of thinking. You know what? They then come with their ideas. That's why we're doing better, because we've harnessed the ideas for people that joined us from SCA. So we've learned. Getting this right will provide the continuous improvement of the future. Not just synergies in the first few years, but how do you then drive the business for a number of years to come, using that structural advantage that we've engineered. To improve the return for shareholders, and this is where we see that return, in the business mix, in synergies, and in opportunities for development. So what is the right business mix? Well, we've had a good look at the business, and there's some parts of it, they're pretty modest, we knew they were there. We just don't believe they're in the best interest of shareholders. We don't think they will give the right return and therefore warrant the investment they need. It's a modest area, but we're disciplined, just as we've done in the old GSNIF business. These are not areas that we'll be pushing hard. So we'll be withdrawing from them. They're not significant, but I think it's very important for that disciplined approach. And start to grow in the higher value added. It's an easy thing to say, but let's not forget about the platform that we've now established with innovation, with service, where we can start to sell our enhanced capabilities, and we should be able to capture that. And as I said, we'll be talking about more of that later. And yes, we have taken on some more paper. We're short in paper, but we'd like to come from about our 70% integration level today back towards where we've been previously, and more around the 50% level. We think that is in the best interest of the group and our investors, to limit your exposure to what is a highly volatile business. But at the same time, without bearing an unrealistic level of risk on the security of supply, so you'll see us readdress the paper integration level. And on the synergies, cost savings, we said 75, we brought everybody together, we've got the ideas, the SCA people, they've been built into plans, they've been rigorously reviewed, they've been tested. If you have one of these plans, you've got to sit in front of Steve and explain it. It's got to work. We've increased it from 75 to 100 million over 3 years. On the cash savings, which is primarily working capital, we said 40 previously, it's now 130 million. And we can also seek to surplus assets. Assets that are there that aren't providing value. It's just there. How do we dispose of them? Some of them have already been disposed of. Some pieces of land. It's already gone. Contract exchange. And we'll be receiving the money. And opportunities then for the development. The third area of driving it. This is the medium term. This is when we use the enhanced footprint and efficiency to drive it at the with our customers. We now have a different proposition to our pan-European customers, enabling us to compete at a level that other people cannot. And in the geography, the products we have in Old Dear Smith, which is primarily in the UK and France, now spreading them across the rest of Europe as we're able to supply. And on innovation, bringing together the 17 design centres, innovation centre, BEST XDA with us, and we have enhanced those resources. We're spending more than they were. That's all included in those synergy targets. So in summary, Dear Smith is changing. It's in line with what we've said. There's good momentum. We are pleased with progress. The plans are there. Execution to date has been as expected. We feel our customers and all our employees are supporting what we're doing and actively supporting. But let's not forget, we are really at the end of this first phase. It's now about the delivery, and we are really looking forward to that. Now, Gary, if I could ask you to take us through.
Thanks, Miles. Good morning. I'm Gary Saunders, and I run our European packaging business, and I want to take you through our customer base and where we see opportunities for profitable growth. Before I joined DS Smith 2 years ago, I spent 30 years in FMCG and retail businesses, and therefore I do understand the needs of our customers, having been one for all that time, and what they require from a truly excellent packaging supplier. As a leading supplier of recycled corrugated packaging across Europe, we're fortunate enough to supply some of the biggest names in European business. I say fortunate because that means we have a very robust customer base. Our top 30 customers include Nestle, P&G, Unilever, Danone, Kraft and Mars, to name a few. They're all FMCG and pan-European in their manufacturing and distribution footprint. And what they want is they all seek strong, reliable, and innovative suppliers can support their strategy and their growth aspirations. What they want is quality products and new packaging solutions. And this bias that we have towards FMCG does reflect the focus we've been pursuing over the last couple of years. Our top 30 also include some strong, more regional FMCG businesses such as United Biscuits and Lactalis, and some excellent industrial customers such as Valeo and Ford. And the strong growth area of internet distribution is well covered in our supply throughout the market leader Amazon. But having said that about those top 30, no one customer represents more than 2% of our turnover, making this growth a robust and low-risk customer base. It's also one that has significant opportunities. And even with one of our largest customers, such as Nestle, we still only supply around a third of their corrugated requirements. And I think that opportunity is really well depicted on this slide, a rather busy slide. But whilst each logo on the previous slide was just one customer, it's worth reflecting on the scale and opportunity that comes from supplying businesses that have numerous European or even worldwide strong brands. You can see here the brands owned by 10 of some of the largest FMCG companies. It's a vast, vast range. And we have strong relationships with over half of these customers. But even then, as I said before, we're not supplying every brand you can see on this chart. But in that lies the opportunity. The brands you see on this slide are brands that require excellence in their packaging to help improve their on-shelf visibility and support their sales growth. And we have the skills, the innovation, and service to meet our customers' needs and help them drive these strong brands forward. Brands such as Friskies, Felix, Quaker, Gatorade, Harvest Crunch, and Chewy that are all up there are very dear to my heart from my previous experiences. And to be honest, they're likely to be the brands that support me in my old age with my pension. But it's those experiences and those experiences of some of my colleagues across Europe that will help us deliver value-adding solutions to meet our customers' needs. If we now look at our top 75 customers, they make up around about 25% of our overall revenue. And within this top 75, 82% of the sales are with FMCG customers. This, to some extent, reflects the size of these FMCG customers, because they are big across Europe. But I think it also highlights our strength and ability to deliver in this sector. Our overall customer base is about 59% FMCG. Still biased towards that sector, but also it highlights the size of the industrial corrugated market across Europe. And if we're going to be successful in our aim to be the leading supplier of recycled packaging in Europe, we have to be able to profitably meet the needs of this sector. Fortunately, with the acquisition of SDA, they provided with us an excellent customer base from which we can build. Let's look at the way we're now structured. We've structured our business to meet our customer needs. We mustn't forget the majority of our customers remain local. And that's why we retain local accountability right the way down to profitability and a geographic structure. We do see pan-European counts as a significant area for growth. And we believe it's where we're different from many others in the market in our geographic reach and the quality of our innovation. We've put in place a strong pan-European sales structure that will be dedicated to those customers that want to operate and work on a pan-European basis. And we'll also work with other customers that want to develop their ability to operate on a pan-European platform. Our new pan-European marketing, innovation and design teams are now developing consistent messaging and consistent innovation for those customers that want it, whilst at the same time ensuring that we continue to supply the market-leading service to all our local customers who still make up 75% of our total sales. But because we now have true European scale, we have the capability to invest and to grow to meet the needs of all of our customers, whether they be pan-European, regional, or local. Now, a phrase used by me and many other FMCG managers back in the 90s was think global, act local. It might seem a bit cliche these days, but I think it does accurately reflect what we need to do to meet the needs of all of our customers today. So even with our newly acquired scale and capability, it's important that we still have clear priorities in our growth aspirations. Priority growth areas will be assessed by where we can add most value, not just for ourselves, but also for our customers. We look for sectors where there will be higher market growth, and therefore a growing margin pool, such as Central and Eastern Europe and the FMCG sector. We'll also focus on pan-European customers, as I said before, where our footprint and capabilities match their needs, and giving them a great supply across a wide number of their sites in Europe. And finally, we will focus on customers that want innovation and excellent service to help them drive their business forward. We see these growth areas as being sectors where the margin pool will be growing, the added value is going to be higher, and there'll be lower cyclicality. keep mentioning the FMCG sector, but it is a sector that we will believe will grow in the long term. The FMCG customers are getting larger. There continues to be consolidation in this market. And they also are looking to Central and Eastern Europe for their European growth. And with the reduction of the effectiveness of traditional marketing payments such as TV advertising, they're looking for more quality and innovative packaging to give them a better in-store presence to have a competitive advantage. Publicly available data shows the FMCG sector is over 50% of the market and set to grow faster than the average over the next few years. Also within other is the internet distribution sector, which we still think will be a key source of growth for us going forward. With SCA Packaging, we acquired a thriving industrial business. It's a business that covers the full automotive supply chain, bulk transport of chemicals, electronics, and pharmaceuticals. The acquisition of SCA highlighted a number of areas within this market that actually are more akin to FMCG markets, in that they require great service, great innovation, and scale to serve them effectively. In return, the margins are good and cyclicality much reduced. A good example of this is the business model we've adopted for supplying the automotive spare parts sector. Spare parts in their nature are less cyclical than parts for new cars. But it's our business model that gives us the competitive edge. By offering these customers full service, similar to the way in which we supply the FMCG customers, we move away from being just a corrugated box supplier. We're experts in managing complexity that the packaging supply chain brings with it. And we use this skill to provide a packaging service for both corrugated packaging and other packaging mediums that we buy in. That way, we support our customer in an area that adds or takes away complexity for them and frees them up to focus on the areas where they can add most value. The net impact is a win-win situation, and we believe we can expand this service across many industrial sectors. I'd now like to introduce two of our regional MDs, Per and Carolyn, and they're going to take you through a few examples of what I've been talking about. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gary. Good morning, everybody. My name is Per Fredriksen, and I'm in charge of our Northern European operations. I'm very pleased to meet all of you. As you can see from the slides, I'm really a packaging guy. I've been in different parts of the industry and taken some experience from that. For the past 3 years, I've been acting as MD of SCA Packaging in Denmark, going through what you can call a classic turnaround, taking the operation from a return on capital of minus 3% to plus 14% in a flat market. I like challenges and I like change. So I think it's a good place to be. I have an international background, which is useful in my current role. And as you can see, I've also lived in the UK, actually running a packaging company in Cambridge, which now happens to be a part of PS Smith. Before I start, I would like just to comment on the initial interaction with the PS Smith management team. Just within a few weeks of announcing the acquisition. Steve and Miles came to meet the entire European management team of SCA Packaging, and it gave a chance to get to know them and get to understand the thoughts behind the acquisition. And that was really important for the management team of SCA Packaging, because after that came a 5-month period while we were waiting for the different approvals. And in that period, we all knew what to expect. During the course of that period waiting for the approval, we also had, as it was mentioned, extensive tests done for the top 80 managers in SCA Packaging. We had interviews and we had extensive feedback sessions at SCA that gave us an impression that this was a professional and also a fair process. And it did mean that all management decisions were filled on day one. We had the clarity and the authority to act efficiently in our individual regions. On day three, we met, as mentioned, the top 250 managers of the combined business, and already then we had the feeling that we acted as one team and we started executing at a very high level. 3 months down the road, I'm very impressed with the quality of the management team. We've taken the best of the two companies, and we have, I believe, very high ambitions and a very high speed of execution. Nobody is hiding the fact that this is indeed an acquisition, but at the same time, there's lots of mutual respect on both sides. It's two worthy opponents coming together, and the strategies and the values of the two original companies is quite similar. I've chosen to give you an example of Lego, a major customer of the SCA packaging business since 2008. Lego is a significant customer with manufacturing at a number of sites throughout Europe, and we supply all of those sites. They require high quality, high impact packaging to stand out on the shelf in the competitive toy market and to maintain their high quality brand image. For the past 4 years, we have grown our position with them and we have worked to improve the amount of value we add to the packaging design process at every step. We have gone from providing relatively simple printed boxes to being integral to the design process of the pack along with install displays which are used throughout Europe. With the Lego, we are backing a winning company with high growth rates. They are the category leader, and they are very demanding. We are interacting with more than 50 people at Lego, which shows how integrated our work is. We interface not only with procurement, but actually to a much greater extent with marketing, design, logistics, the whole supply chain. Together with Lego marketing and design teams, we are creating whole new concepts for future packaging. The pack on the slide is a good example of one of our designs created from concept to manufacturing through a collaboration interface with Lego marketing and by sharing our consumer insights that were developed through a series of workshops. In the spirit of our partnership, Lego even supported our internal SCA Design Center Challenge in 2012 as key sponsor. Since SCA Packaging became part of DS Smith, we have in fact continued to win business with Lego. They are happy because the combined business is stronger in Central and Eastern Europe, where they already have significant production and where they see growth in production in the future. They see DS Smith as a company willing to invest both in capacity and in competencies. And we are now able to offer a yet wider range of innovative and technical skills and build on what we've been doing before. I have no doubt that we have the potential to even double our business with Lego as we leverage the strength of our combined business. In conclusion, this example shows how we work in partnership with our customers, delivering more value to them and hence growing our business with them and improving the quality of our business mix. The DS Smith acquisition gives us additional credibility in the market to be able to support customers with a pan-European manufacturing base and a requirement for a continuous stream of innovation. And I'd now like to give the word to my colleague in the management team, Caroline Wagner.
Good morning, ladies, and I have spotted some ladies and gentlemen. And thank you very much to you, Per, for a very good synergy story on Lego, which leads us very nicely into the region I represent, which is Central Europe. Because we've just signed a contract with Lego for several hundred thousand euros of display business in our plant in Hanau. I'm Caroline Wagner. I've been appointed, as Mark pointed out, as Managing Director for the region Central Europe, which consists of Germany, Austria, and Switzerland after the acquisition by DS Smith. And as you can see, I'm a packaging engineer. I have a strong background in the technology of our business. I have a wealth of experience in paper, packaging, corrugated, print, and display. But don't worry about it. I will not bore you with technical explanations. But if you're really interested, we can discuss them in private. So I represent a market which is quite interesting, and I know it very well. Although I started out as an engineer, I've spent the last 11 years in FCA packaging in sales, mostly in the German market. And as you might recall from my slide in the beginning, the German market, that's a big chunk in the middle, and it has a very, very big circle to it, which represents actually the size of the market. And the size of the market is quite substantial. You might also recall the number that is in that circle. We're number three today in this market, so there might be some growth aspiration for us there. What is this market, the German packaging market? It's the biggest market there is for our product. It's an 8 billion square meter market, if you want to think in those dimensions, or you can think in those dimensions of corrugated. And it's also a very, very interesting display market, with an estimated turnover in display of about 500 million euros per annum. When you think of Germany, you probably think of a very industrialized country, and that's, of course, very true. Strong foothold, as we've seen, in industrial companies like Bayer, Roche, BASF, those come to mind. And don't we all love our Audis, BMWs, and Porsches, which are all being made in Germany. And God bless the automotive industry. But it's also a country where we have a very strong FMCG foundation. So really, literally every brand that might come to your mind, and Gary reminded you of some of them, has a stronghold in the German market, actually producing some of their really global brands that all of us use every day. Mars is there, Kraft is there, Unilever is there. Nestle is actually producing a full range of products in many sites, with 12 all included, in the German market. So whatever you buy, be it a coffee product from Nestle, Nespresso, I think you all like it, or whether you buy chocolate, coffee, Arthur, it's all actually being produced in Germany. And it's very, very positive. Those are really all our buying customers. And they form a strong foundation of FMCG customers in our market. Now, when we first talked to these customers about DS Smith and FCA packaging acquired by DS Smith, what is their reaction? Just like you heard before, they were very, very positive because they are looking for a partner that has a real and true European footprint and that can really offer them a wide range of products in the whole European geography. So they were quite pleased in this acquisition, really. And what they're looking for is obviously a partner who is just as innovative as they are. Those FMCG companies, they have to come out with new products basically every month. Not all of them survive, but they have to come out with them, and all of them need a good packaging solution to even ever make it on the shelf. So they're looking for a very innovative partner, and they have found the hard enough in very many cases. And now we can actually offer our customers an even enlarged, innovative product range. And I've just selected two examples where already today our customers in our geography in Central Europe can benefit from the new company we have mentioned. One of them is called the Mandy Construction Company. It's actually been developed 5 years in France. It's a patented product. It's now being licensed to Rockham in the US. And we can drive this opportunity in Europe big time. It's a system solution. It's not just a box. It's not just something made out of corrugated. It's really a system solution that would make it so attractive for our customers. And again, our fluid is a specific fluid type. It is installed in 7 UK sites. It's already very strong in Europe. And recently, we've installed it in our region in Germany, in Hanau, where we're now actually producing it. So what's so specific about this? What's so exciting about the box? I can get very excited about it. So this is another really leading edge company. Some of you might know this. This is the product Febreze. It's made by Procter & Gamble. And I'm sure you all agree with me that Procter & Gamble is one of the most innovative global FMCG companies with really leading-edge brands. Febreze example here is really the Mandel construction. As I said, I can explain it in detail later on. It's already being used in their plants in France, Belgium, Czech Republic, Germany, and Italy on their lines. And what does it do for the customer? It actually does exactly what they need. It improves their run speed on filling lines. It allows lighter weight corrugated floor to be used. And you've got it on the right side of the chart. Marketing, shelf ready. Bring the product to the customer in an easy way, easy to use, attractive. And improve your own production value, and be, of course, procurement always comes into the equation, be competitive with it. So Per took us back to our childhood with Lego, and another example also coming from this company, P&D, is taking us even further back. Some might have used for this very soon. What's the story behind this Pampers? Pampers is a leading brand, and you know, P&G expects always high standards of innovation. Pampers comes out with many new designs. They come actually out with new types of products over time, and they need flexibility also on their packaging. Now, P&G with this box was already a customer of ours, but they needed to go to a different type of thing, and this was possible by actually bringing the business to the plant in Hanau in Germany. And we're now using the same technology arsenal in our plant in Hanau in Germany that P&G finds very innovative and is using actually in their factory. And I just met the director of research and development, Lisa Sanchez, and he's coming to Germany next month, and she's not excited that we're now supplying this customer out of Hanau. We're going to see their factory in Euskirchen also coming to our plant in Hanau to finally see how this is being made. So it's a very, very good story of how already now, after 100 days, this has actually paid off for us in our customers. Well, now, if you ask Miles, which is the best place to be, really, in the first week, in the last week of September, in Germany, in Bavaria, Miles would not say it's the Oktoberfest. Miles would probably say, I hope, the best place to be in Germany, in Bavaria, in the last week of September, is actually the Fachpack, which is one of the leading European trade fairs for packaging materials and packaging products. And this year we've had our first ever common presence of BSMS packaging at the Fachmarkt in Nuremberg with a common stand, and colleagues, sales professionals from Germany, Switzerland, Austria, and France together actually generated 700 customer leads within just 3 days of the fair, and we're going to make them fruitful.
Morning. Thank you, Carolyn. There are some great examples there. So I'm Steve Dryden. I'm the finance director of DS Smith. I really just want to show you some detail behind the synergies that we've announced this morning, and just show you how they're going to translate into our financial performance. I guess the theme is more synergies faster. To some extent, you could say, well, we've only had 100 days. But the reality behind this is we had almost 11 months looking at SCA packaging, 6 months detailed due diligence. And even after that, we spent time, as Per referred to, with the management teams, getting to really think about what's the synergy behind combining these two big organisations. What are they? Cost, cash, and probably what's new today is disposing of some surplus assets. So cost synergies, we announced in January, €75 million. Today, we're confident of achieving €100 million. Cash, we announced 40. Today, we're confident of €130 million. Surplus asset disposals, we're confident that over the next 3 years, we'll achieve disposal proceeds of €100 million. I think the key thing is, after 100 days, we have bottom-up ownership at all levels of the organisation, from the likes of Per, Howland, and the teams that work for them, for delivering these synergies in the timeline that we've talked about. Why are we better? We're better in terms of our synergies because we've built in with what the SCA packaging team can see and what they've identified for us, but also the level of detail and timing that we have in terms of our actual plan for this is such that we can reduce the integration discount that we apply to these synergies. On that, it's all about a clear plan for delivery. So on the cost side, you know, when we spoke in January, it was €75 million. Behind that, the detail was on procurement, €53 million. But we now have established a pan-European procurement network, really working with our suppliers to show them what a high-quality customer they have, what a secure, financially strong customer they have. From that, we can see procurement savings, cost savings, €64 million. Head offices, we talked about €10 million cost benefit. We now see 16. Because obviously there was an SCA packaging head office. We've announced the closure and relocation to a much smaller office. But also there are other smaller head offices across the SCA packaging group that we can look to combine with DS Smith and serious savings. Finally, operational improvements. We talked about €12 million in January. We now see €20 million. As Per has talked earlier, one of our first conversations is opportunities to reduce costs operationally in Sweden. And similarly, I've got an example later on to show you what we're going to do in Poland. So, cost savings, €25 million increase. In this financial year to April 2013, we expect to deliver €25 million cost synergies and the balance evenly over the following 2 years. Cost to achieve this has only increased by €10 million to €90 million. Again, that will be phased evenly over the next 3 years. Cash savings. And I say substantial cash savings in the size of acquisition that we've done. Working capital was €32 million. We now see €100 million. Just to help you really see that in context, SCA Packaging have €280 million working capital when we acquired it. That's about 10% of revenue. DS Smith operates on a model with 5% of revenue. So you can see there the opportunity to improve, we can see in the actions that we're going to take the opportunity to improve by 100 million euros. CapEx efficiency, we said 8 million, we now see 30 million euros. Some of it's better buying, you know, the work that I referred to earlier, procurement going through. Some of it is SCA packaging, it's a well-invested business. We use some of that infrastructure that's in place to get access to our customers quicker than we are planning to before. The new thing is really surplus assets, 100 million euros. There's obviously the EU remedy disposals that we announced in May, that's factoring in there, but also as we've gone through a detailed look at all the properties that exist within FDA packaging, the surplus properties there, and that we can look to sell and sell for reasonable proceeds, or helping bring down our debt. Delivery this year, in terms of capital expenditure and working capital, will be 60 million euros. You've really got to think about the return on capital employed implications. And don't forget, that is the most important measure for DS Smith. And often, it's not just about driving profit and earnings, of course, the cost of energy helps with that. Think about the denominator of what's happening with the capital base here. We've paid 1.58 billion euros for SCA packaging. We're going to take out 100 million euros in working capital. We'll take out 100 million euros in surplus assets. The net investment side of that return on capital employed will be off a denominator of 1.3 billion. And that's one of the real areas we see to drive shareholder returns. This is really just to really give you a tangible example of what we are doing on operational improvement. This is Poland. I'm sure many of you know that DS Smith has always made attractive return on sales, attractive returns on capital in our Polish business. SCA Packaging, well, they didn't make good returns on sales, return on capital. It's all about making the combined business stronger. So we're looking to close two sites, one production, one sales distribution, and downsizing third site. What we'll have is a much more efficient, lower cost business in the enlarged Poland. Finally, in the southwest, we were planning to start a greenfield site in Poland over the next 2 years. That would be quite substantial capital investment, maybe 30, 35 million euros. We now find ourselves in the fortunate position with SCA Packaging owning a site there in Lawa, where we can invest 10 to 13 million euros, thereby delivering quite significant capital expenditure savings and getting there to market with our customers far faster. There's often other benefits from acquisitions, and I thought I'd just take the opportunity to update you on those which are obviously outside of the immediate cost of cash synergies. But net debt to EBITDA, as you know, when we announced this acquisition, we said at the time of acquisition we would be above 2. That's actually above our medium-term target, 2x net debt to EBITDA. And we're really pleased to be able to say today we expect to achieve that medium-term target 1 year earlier. Net debt to EBITDA by the end of April 2013 will be at or below 2x. Interest rates, small change here, only 20 basis points, but I think what's encouraging is in terms of appetite to finance the estimate. And there we undertook a refinancing during the summer, taking some of the bridge financing out to a 9-year maturity. Again, there we managed to achieve not just a lengthening of our maturity, but also a modest improvement in our finance costs. Tax rate. At the time of acquisition, we said 27.6%. We now are confident that this year and beyond, so it's not just a one-off, we'll be at 24%. And really comes from just having a better understanding of not just the countries where we can make profits, but the actual tax rates and the structures they're in. And that means that we'll get confident in the 24% tax rate. And CapEx, now the first CapEx efficiency, so one of the things, the benefits of that, our previous guidance was for cash CapEx of £160 million, looking into this year and next, that'll be £150 million. And then also just to remind you, DS Smith compared to what was previously is a much, much more European business. Some 60% of our revenues are in euros. If you work down the profit loss account, we are sensitive on to euro translation. Mm-hmm. 1 euro cent is about £1 million of our profit before tax. Finally, this is what it really all means in terms of our medium-term targets. In terms of volume growth, you can clearly see from Gary, Pears and Carolyn's presentation, you know, there's clear areas that we've identified that give us confidence about GDP plus 1% volume growth and that we're going to be in the right sectors. But having said that, you've got to recognise there may be a short-term effect. This business is run on return on sales and return on capital. You know, there's parts of the business aren't going to help us achieve those objectives. We're not going to be in them. We're going to look at everything in the most sensible way possible. And on return on sales, medium-term target has always been 7-9%. Pro forma for the enlarged group is about 6%. I'm sure you can see that 100 million euros of cost synergies coming in, why we feel confident about the 7-9% range. Similarly, for return on average capital employed, pro forma about 12% return on capital. Again, that combination of the cost synergies and the asset base falling with the cash synergies mean that we think that we will be towards the upper end of that medium-term target. You see the cash flow for operating profit will be strong, the cash synergies coming through. Finally, the net debt to EBITDA, that combination of cost synergies but also the cash synergies coming through, so I'm very confident that we're going to get there to below 2x and a year earlier than we actually said in January.
Thank you, and I'm sure you'll all agree, it's just 100 days, but it seems to what he's been saying, and see not only the knowledge and the depth, but the enthusiasm as well. So thank you. So really to recap, we're pleased with progress. We are. We spent a lot of time thinking about the business. If you go right back to when we approached FCA, we had 6 months of bilateral, exclusive negotiations, full access to the company. So we felt we had a very good idea about what was there. Post the announcement, we had 5 months of, again, access, plan, think, understand the business. So on day one, we're ready. So, yeah. Looking good, but frankly that's just come from good planning in the first place. We feel that the footprint that we have created in Europe offers a structural advantage to us that we just haven't had before, and that combined with a much more efficient cost base, asset base, and backed with the increased innovation capability, again, will put us in a very strong position going forward. But it is built on engagement. It is built on all of our stakeholders, so with our customers and getting right there. And to date, we've been pleased with the support. Really with our people and how we're starting to engage in what is a stronger business where the ownership is as far into the organisation as we can possibly get to it. So we're going to continue working on this, and we are going to come back to shareholders in the first half of the next financial year, and again have a similar session to today, where we can really talk about how we're starting to optimise our position in the marketplace, to get a further updates on progress. But I do have here a very short video. And it's just designed to give you a sort of a flavour of the way that we started to engage people in the FCA business on day three. It's very short, but it just goes about how together the companies are stronger. Thank you. myself and my colleagues, we're very happy to take any questions that any of you may have, and then we'll come on to people listening through the telephone. I'm sure they have. There's a microphone. Just so the audience see you are.
Thanks, Miles. It's Alexander Mason, J.P. Morgan Cazenove. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, on industrial packaging, clearly the focus of the group has historically been on FMCG and continues to be so, I assume. But 41% of corrugated volumes, I believe, are now industrial. Where do you see that going into the future? In addition, what are the differences in the return on capital employed in industrial compared to consumer goods? And thirdly, what are the different challenges and opportunities you see in industrial packaging compared to FMCG?
We still see FMCG as a growth area, as I mentioned in my presentation. Although we're not going to grow the whole business by moving away from that, and we certainly aren't. Industrial is going to remain an important part of our business, as you say, 41%. What we want to do is to focus on areas in industrial where we can really add more value. And what the FDA acquisition is doing is a number of areas in industrial that actually do have very good returns. They may well be a little bit more cyclical, but actually some of them are a lot less cyclical than we originally thought, which is the upside. And what's really good is there are areas where there's a huge amount of innovation. The designs and the packaging are actually very complex. And if we can bring our knowledge and great service and great innovation to the sector by offering a more full service orientation, we think we can actually deliver the margins and return on capital as per the FMCG businesses and manage that cyclicality much more effectively. So I think for us, it's going to remain an important area. Yes, our focus will be FMCG. What we want to do is to try and bring all of our learnings from those areas to the industrial sectors and for those customers who want a fuller, wider service. And hopefully what we will do then is get more value in their business and we'll get more value out of ourselves.
And just one more, if I may, just with regard to revenue synergies, it's something we haven't talked about today. Clearly, I know that you may be reluctant to quantify this, but can you just explain whether you'd expect revenue synergies as part of this?
Clearly, we think there are opportunities there, and we said we'll come back in the first half of next year and talk more about that. But it's one thing to have ideas that we're very keen on shareholders, is when we say things, they're proper plans, fully justifiable, and that is going to be delivered. We're talking to customers, the response is being good. Some of them could be in a 1 year or 2 year contract, and they may be passed away through that. So I think it's important for us to really understand and then come back to you, not only with those opportunities, but also the segmentation, etc., and show how both businesses, with the combining skills, really growing the categories and the areas we've already mentioned, FMCG, exactly what we're going to be doing there. So I think we do have to come back with a full presentation. So we're on nothing in the case for now at the moment.
Hi, it's Alex Hugh at UBS. I've got two questions. The first one is a bit multifaceted, so I'll just do that one. In the operational synergies number that you put out there, $20 million, doesn't necessarily seem that high. So I was just wondering if you could, to help us, just maybe put the pro forma margin, or sorry, the margins for the SCA packaging business on the new format that you're going to do. If you could just talk through the margins on the different divisions, and then maybe by function as well. So recycling is where I'm thinking.
It's a lot more than 12 we originally said, so miles and away we have come out of the calculator and we've got bottom of the plant in place and commitment to set down the river, and that's where we are now.
There's nothing to prevent you in continental Europe from going more towards that, what do you call it, cradle to grave type process you've got in the UK. Okay, but that's not built into the synergies number three that you've given, I guess. Okay, and then my second question, which is much more straightforward. In terms of customer retention rates, any differences between the two businesses? And also customer win rates, actually, while we're on that.
The customer retention, the word experience is the answer is better than the tools. We thought there'd be more overlap and where they were. Retention rate in terms of the contract churn is in the big FMCG companies that we can really compare. They aren't that similar, but they're both enjoying quite extended periods for many, many years. If I could just add one thing to what Steve said on the operation synergies. But when we talk synergies, this is value added as a result of the acquisition to go to the bottom line. It is not business as usual. And the gross number is much higher. But of course it would improve labour efficiency, we improve wages, we improve this. That's business as usual. And sometimes you see on history shows some people put up some big numbers, of course it's competed away. I'm not saying that it's a structural change that could not have happened without the acquisition. That's why the numbers is, and that's why it's built in the forecast, and that's why investors can see it coming through. I think it's a very important rigour that we apply to the numbers that we're listening to.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, good morning. David Phillips from Citi. Can I just ask about competitor reaction and what you've seen in the first 3 or 4 months on the ground, you know, people phoning out? You take your point about customer churn has been very good, but have you seen any more signs of aggressive behaviour from the incumbents in the market?
You always have pockets of strong customer reaction. I don't think competitor reaction has been any more than we've seen in the past.
So slightly related to that, I mean, with the tough macro environment in mind, any particular regions within countries or countries themselves that have surprised you on the downside, either through, you know, customer closures or just general very, very tough economic conditions, or is it as you expected?
I think it's pretty much as we expected. expect all these big companies to come together. The corollary of that, of course, is the fact that there's not much overlap, and that's why we haven't so you don't get the ability to rationalise your footprint where you don't have the overlap.
I just want to find out, if my memory of the prospectus is right, back in January we were talking about an FMCG industrial split of about 51-52 versus 48, and today we're talking 59-41. Has there been some, have you just, would getting your hands on the asset discovered this, the split was slightly differently, or had I picked it up incorrectly at the outset? Thank you.
The good news on the economy is exactly as we expect it to be. The bad news is exactly as we expect it to be. There's no growth. But we'll be back.
Good morning, Hex Forsyth from Oriel Securities. You've made a play, and clearly important today, on comparative advantage and competitive advantage from innovation. The two examples you've given are both coming out of the old G.F. Smith business into the combined organisation. Could you just say how you're going to organise the innovation go forward on a group basis and give us an idea of development costs comparatively between two organisations pre, and what kind of number you think you're going to end up with post?
I don't know whether that's good or not. It's a separate way by way of the massive amount. But there is no in none of the facilities to assume that we're not going to be one of the largest actually in the world of China. So I think we're going to say we often develop this kind of isolation.
Good morning, it's Barry Dixon from Daily Research. Thanks for a very comprehensive presentation. Just a couple of questions. In terms of the working capital, I mean, it's a very impressive number in terms of the revised takeoff. You might just give us some sense in terms of how you actually do that, the elements of that, you know, because clearly SDA was a much less efficient business than your own in terms of working capital management. How easy has it been, I suppose, to change the creditor terms or debtor terms, or has it been around reduction of excess inventory? Second question is around the recycling business, and you clearly have a very successful recycling business here in the UK. You had mentioned, I think, previously that you would look at trying to set up something similar in continental Europe. Maybe you might just help us understand your plans on that. And then the third question is around the disposal of the surplus assets. Are there businesses in that, or is it just assets? And if there are businesses,
what impact would that have on either top line profits or margins or and or returns? Thank you very much.
Just take the recycling, and then Steve will take you through the other two questions. The recycling, the way we collect and actually drive the use of corrugated through our recycling is unparalleled in the industry. There's nobody else who has this approach. We believe the interface with the retailer, driving the use of a recycled packaging at the point of sale for the final consumer, influencing that has been fundamental to our growth and development. We are very successful at this in the UK, and the opportunity with SCA on the continent is to replicate that model. So again, from day one, the organisation structure has gone in to ensure that we're able to do that. And today, people who are working on that, we have all of Tesco's operations now across the continent, in all regions, including in Ireland as well. And the work with the other major retailers in Europe as to how we can start to build that model. Now, Peter McGuinness, who runs our recycling operation, is actually here today.
Karthik Swaminathan from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. I had a couple of quick questions, if I may. The first was on the closures you're enacting in Eastern Europe. I was just wondering how much capacity, if any, is going to be taken out, or are you planning on moving machinery around to maintain your output there? Because if you were cutting capacity, it feels a bit counterintuitive relative to your growth ambition there.
There's absolutely no capacity issue from that at all.
So simply just moving things around?
It's closing, it's reorganisation. Our capital program that Steve has put in allows for us putting a reduced amount of capital to satisfy the market. We have a fabulous position there, and it's almost a little bit uncanny the way that factory there. Their asset utilization is about 25% of ours. Their asset turnover. Look at what we bought. We bought a business that its asset turnover was just over 1 time. Yes, this is missing over 2 times. That's all about using that. It's the same as your working capital. It's about a return on capital philosophy, and that asset utilisation, asset turnover, as well as margin.
management tool is asset utilization and how we continue to get more and more out of it. Same with working capital, property disposal, surplus assets. It's often a part of the balance. It's the balance sheet, and I think generally not everybody really understands that. Take companies, what's your asset turnover? How many times on a presentation is fundamental to the way we work, and
thank you. That actually leads quite nicely into my second question, which was on ROCE and the targets. The first part was, are you looking for a similar return to what you achieved under OTOR acquisition for SCA? And the second part was, given that you could be towards the top end of your ROCE target range through the cycle post synergy, then should you be looking for a rebasing?
You don't
give
forecasts,
it's
just $1.62. Historic profits were 159 million. We've taken 230 million out of the asset base, and it's got 100 million in synergies on that. You can start to work the number there. It's about return on capital and the confidence in the reliance of shareholders on that. And any target is set to come back to in due course. But the numbers and the cash flow coming from that, and that's why the debt's coming down, that's why the
Ladies and gentlemen on the phone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We have a question coming through. It comes from the line of Carl Green from Co-op Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. Just a couple of very simple modelling questions. In terms of the categories which are up for potential discontinuation, sub 4% of group revenues, you've already said it contributes minimal profitability. Just what about the EBITDA contribution in terms of reducing depreciation going forwards? And then secondly, just on the tax guidance, that's the P&L rate that you've talked about. What about the cash tax rate?
When I say minimal profitability, that's actually whether it's EBITDA or EBITDA. That's why you don't do it attractive in absorbing capital into the capital. On the asset is an income statement charge of 24%, the actual cash tax. We're inherently in a certain kind of a say,
okay, thank you.
Are there more questions on the line?
We currently have no further questions coming through from the phones.
Look, everybody, we are around afterwards. I think hopefully there's a cup of tea being arranged. Just to say thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate seeing so many of you here. And we look forward to our pre-close shortly, and then obviously our half-year result, December, and coming back in the first half next year. Thank you, everybody, for your time. Thank you.
Well done. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining today's conference. You may now replace your handsets.